I want the constant challenge. I want the excitement of moving forward. And so getting bigger and bigger brings more challenges. I can honestly say we don't feel like we've achieved a lot. You know, we are very hungry, humble, and focused. Hey guys, David Robinson here. Welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. I've got an incredible guest for you today. This is an individual that I actually had on the show just about 2 years ago. At that time, he had only acquired, I say only, but still impressive, but he had acquired roughly 300 units at that point in time in the Phoenix market. And since then, he and his team have acquired $1.5 billion and have thousands of units under their belt. They have built a phenomenal company that has scaled dramatically from one employee just a couple years ago to over 100 full-time employees at this point in time. My guest is Mr. Zach Haptonstall, who is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Rise 48 Equity, based out of Phoenix, Arizona. They have built an incredible business and scaled at such a fast pace that I am so excited to have Zach back on the show to talk about how they scaled so fast, some of the insights that he has to share with you, our listeners, to help you scale your business, and also what he sees on the horizon with all the changes that are happening in the market, what his business is looking like, what he plans to do moving forward, and some of the strategies that they plan on deploying to be successful in the coming recession and moving forward from there. So really excited to bring you Zach Haptonstall. All right, Mr. Haptonstall, welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, David. Really appreciate you having me on again, man. It's been a while and excited to be back on and look forward to providing some value to your listeners here today.
It has been a while in one sense, but in another, it really hasn't. I mean, because you were on, I look back, you were on the podcast April 30th. At least this is when we released it. I can't remember exactly when we recorded, maybe a couple weeks prior, but April 30th of 2020, I believe is the date.
Yeah. So just over 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little over 2 years from now. And back then you hadn't even rebranded, or I even think you hadn't, officially put your business together as Rise 48. You were still referring to your company as Summit Equity. You had acquired a sum total of 308 units worth $35 million. I believe that was across 3 to 4 different assets.
Right, 4 different deals. Yep, you're right. That's right.
And here we are today, as I mentioned in the bio and in the intro, $1.5 billion in transactions. And you guys have just absolutely crushed the market there in the greater Phoenix area. And so I'm super excited to have you back on the show to talk about your journey that you've been on over the last 24 months, 36 months. And you have a lot of insight and a lot that you've learned in that time frame. And I'm hoping to sort of glean out of you some insights that will help our listeners on their own personal journey. So with that being said, maybe just real quick, catch us up. Like, tell us a brief overview of how you went from, 3 years ago and only 300 units or even 0 units to where you're at today.
Yeah, absolutely, David. Yeah, sounds good. So yeah, I mean, quick background, because I know we have a lot we want to cover here. So, I have no background in real estate, just kind of W-2 income earner, was in healthcare marketing, and, in January 2018, quit my job, lived off of savings, took 14 months to buy the first deal, which we bought that in February of 19. And then, like you mentioned, David, in 2019, we bought 4 deals worth about $35 million. So kind of got the momentum going. Then 2020 hits and we felt like we were really going to hit our stride, right around when you and I last talked in April of 2020. And then COVID hit, obviously, right? And that kind of slowed everything down and we were very frustrated. So that kind of slowed. I think we bought our 5th deal in March of 2020. And right around then as we'd start to formally rebrand to Rise 48 Equity, like you said. So, it was my partners, Bikram Sandhu, our CFO, Robert Shevchik, our chief construction officer, and myself. Prior to that, we all had our own individual brands, so to speak. So we kind of like quote unquote got married became Rise 48 Equity. And, you know, through third and fourth quarter of 2020, we started really, you know, loading up on off-market deals and kind of loading that pipeline to really start closing in, you know, beginning of 2021, and really started hitting our momentum and really growing, you know, very quickly, you know, performing and buying a lot of deals in 2021 and here in 2022. And so, you know, through that time, we became an S Corp so that we can start hiring employees and support a payroll. And so it was actually, it sounds crazy to say this out loud, but March of 2021, we hired our first employee, our director of asset management. And now here we are, you know, end of June 2022, as we record this, and we have, we're completely vertically integrated now with our own property management company. We have over 100+ full-time employees on full benefits. And so we probably got 30 to 40 people just on Rise 48 Equity and looking at investor relations, accounting, asset management, you know, financial reporting, all these different things that we do. And then we have the property management company, which is probably at least 70 to 80 full-time people on full benefits. And so we've been very, you know, blessed and fortunate to now have, you know, acquired just over, we've acquired 34 assets, $1.2 billion of acquisitions. We've about 5,700 units. We've now gone full cycle, executed the plan and sold 10 of those assets. And that's really helped us grow. And we can talk about that kind of, you know, getting that performance, attracting investors. But we've just been very fortunate to kind of stay, you know, super focused, concentrated in this Phoenix market and just build out infrastructure in the Phoenix market. That's kind of, you know, what we've been up to and just been able to kind of scale, you know, with this laser focus.
So again, incredible the amount of growth that you guys have experienced in such a short period of time. And so there's a couple ways I want to take this conversation. The first is I want to sort of start high level and talk about some of the soft skills that you guys had and how it all came together. And then we'll get a little bit more granular. The first thought that I have is, like, look, when we originally connected and I interviewed you, you know, a couple of years ago, it was very clear and apparent that you were a high achiever, you were a go-getter, you were ready to make things happen. And that being said, like, look, there's a lot of go-getters out there in the world. There's a lot of guys that are hustling and working hard and are super sharp that don't accomplish what you guys have accomplished. And I get it. A lot of people don't want to toot their own horn, that type of thing. So I want you to put that aside. And I want you to just really tell people, like, what's the difference between you and your team and what you've been able to accomplish and all the others that are out there that are very smart, capable, hardworking individuals that are that haven't been able to achieve that level of success?
Yeah, no, great question, David. And like you said, I mean, we like to always, you know, stay humble. We don't think we've achieved a lot. We always want to stay hungry. But I think, you know, some of the things that we've done that maybe have set us apart, and it's always tough to say because we don't have insight into what everybody else is doing, right? But we know what we do, and we think we do it very well. And so I think, you know, some of the, like you referenced some of the soft skills. So I think initially, you take the three of us, the three co-founders, you know, we didn't find each other overnight. You know, I quote unquote dated like 7 or 8 different business partners before finding these guys. And knowing that they were kind of the guys that I wanted to build a long-term relationship with, a long-term business with. And so, you know, you got Bikron, our CFO, who was really elite financial analysis, elite at building systems and processes. And so he's doing all of our underwriting on the front end, really overseeing operations post-acquisition. None of this is possible without Bikron, right? He does so much. And we grind so hard, you know, constantly working so many hours. You know, Robert brings that construction background. He's our chief construction officer, master's degree in architecture, and he's really overseeing all these large capital item projects and interior renovations, which is key because I think a lot of people have forgot the last few years that it is called value add, right? And a lot of people can be made to look smart, you know, based on a strong market. And we've been huge benefactors of a strong market, right? No doubt. But I think that it's a combination of, you know, a few different skill sets. I mean, I've done a good job, I think, at forming relationships with, you know, brokers, raising capital, and then really just having the leadership component to scale a business. Because when you're hiring this many people, you have to manage them and you need leadership, you need accountability, you need a presence of discipline and focus because everybody's going to look to you ultimately.
And I want to touch on that. And sorry to cut you off there, but I do want to touch on that because you bring up a great point. Like, you know, you guys each had your own roles, but my understanding of your business and your role is that, hey, you were leading from the front here and right. And scaling this business. You didn't have any prior real business building experience, at least big business. Like, you were an independent sales consultant, right? In the medical space, medical device space, I believe.
Yeah. So I worked for a hospice organization. And so I was a marketer and then I was a director of marketing. So I was managing a marketing team, you know, managing people. And then I was a president and co-owner of a large hospice organization here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So I actually did have a lot of experience, and we scaled the company from about 50 employees to 110 employees in about 8 months, and we sold it. And so I did have a lot of experience of scaling a business, you know, very quickly, managing people, quickly recruiting, hiring, training, and then managing them. And so that scaled, you know, and translated very well. I think it was a different industry, but you know, you're dealing with people. And then you take Bikron's experience. You know, he has an economics degree, CPA. He worked at PricewaterhouseCooper as a corporate auditor, and he was a consulting. He worked for a private consulting firm for large Fortune 100 companies. So he has a lot of experience building back office systems, processes, things like that. So I think we were able to take our past skill sets, apply them to this business. And, you know, I think that, I mean, frankly, I think we probably outwork most of our competition. I mean, to give you guys an idea, no exaggeration, you know, Bikron and I show up to we have our own office building. So we just recently bought our own office building. Previous to us owning the building, we were leasing an office. And so I think, you know, on the heels of COVID, everybody was doing remote work. We said, no, none of that. We didn't allow any remote work. We want everybody showing up at the office every single day, Monday through Friday, your full-time staff, because we want the accountability. And we think that there's a lot of power in having that in-person presence and the camaraderie and the teamwork, right? And so, you know, we've been able to quickly scale, and it's all been scaling through in-person staff, right? These people, I mean, if they're not in person in the office, it's because they work on the property or they're in the field. But there's nobody working remotely, and we feel very strongly about that. You know, even since the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, you know, we didn't want that to be part of our company, just because we don't think that we don't think you get good results with that, frankly. And maybe some other industries you can, but for this, we wanted people to be here. We wanted accountability. And then, you know, I think that we're here at the office, you know, 8:30, 9 a.m. every day, and we leave at like 9 or 10 p.m. every night. And so, you know, Bikron and I are working minimum 10 to 12, 10 to 13 hour days each day. And then you go home and you're catching up on emails. And so I think that a lot of people in this space, you know, they're not able to put that kind of time in because you have families, whatever it is. They're not willing to make those sacrifices and grind it out. Because, I mean, if you want to have big results, you have to outwork everybody. You know what I mean? And you can't just outwork everybody, because you have to get results, right? And so we're laser focused on kind of hitting our goals. And I think we've been able to, something that's been a little bit unique about us is you have a lot of sponsors across the country that, you know, they're buying deals in different markets. They don't live in the markets that they're buying deals in, right? And I think even fewer people have actual staff, you know, on site, boots on the ground. We've intentionally only stayed in Phoenix for a reason, right? We have a lot of equity demand. We could go to other markets and we could raise a lot of money and buy deals all across the country, but we have our infrastructure here. We have a strategic advantage. You know, we control our supply chain 100% by buying all of our materials directly wholesale. We manage all of our assets. And so we've purchased over 5,000 units, David, and we can get to any of them within like 30 to 40 minutes. So I think just kind of being laser focused on this one niche has allowed us to scale and kind of gain an advantage. And now we've just been focused on building out infrastructure, right? And building out the departments. The good thing is that Robert Bikron and I, you know, we literally were in the weeds doing every little, you know, minutia detail for every department you can think of in the early years. And so we know all these things. Well, that allowed us to start training people, you know, hiring people and training them how to do that. And then it was on us to start trusting those people, right? And start delegating those tasks, because, you know, I can't be doing all the loan documents and transactional documents to close a deal when I've got, you know, 5 or 6 phone calls with an investors today. And so, you know, things like that allowed us to start delegating, kind of identify, okay, what do I do the best? And you have to do this. You have to constantly reevaluate this at different phases of your business, right? Because early on, I had to do all that, those loan docs, because we don't have anybody, right? But as we start having revenue and we can support staff, now I have to reevaluate. Okay, I can pass that off. Now what do I need to do? Okay, investors want to talk to the decision maker or the principal. You know, I need to be raising money, finding deals, overseeing meetings, and you know, make sure that people are being held accountable. So I think we've just been able to really, you know, constantly stay focused, constantly grind, but also kind of have this more macro vision of where we want the company to go, which has helped us a lot.
So you mentioned March 2021, you hired your first employee, and now, you know, over 100 full-time employees between your two companies. How critical was it to have exits that allowed you to grow? Would you have been able to grow had you not been able to, had you not had some early exits?
Great question, David. Yeah, great question. I don't think we would have been able to grow as fast as we have, honestly, because it's all kind of feeds itself. So, I mean, you know, it's all about, you can only, when we say grow, you know, in this business, in order to increase your revenue, you have to be able to buy more deals, right? Because you're buying, that's how you make money. You buy a deal. And the way it works for us is we're an S corp, right? So basically when we buy a deal, we take an acquisition fee. Well, that acquisition fee goes to our company corporate account, which then goes out to cover all of our overhead. So we have like a large 7-figure annual payroll. We have an office space, a mortgage, we have marketing subscriptions, et cetera. So that acquisition fee goes to cover all the overhead. And then we recycle it back out into escrows as earnest money, right? So it's really the lifeblood of the company. That's all your, that's all of your revenue. We don't make any money from cash flow or sweat equity until we actually execute the plan and sell the deals, okay, as principals. And so, you know, when you start to sell those earlier deals and you're performing, then what it does is it shows a win, right? It's a win that you can show investors. And what's happened is we've just been flooded with other investor referrals because our investors who are in those deals are very happy. They're referring their colleagues, their friends, their family. And you start getting people to notice you online. And we're just having all this equity, you know, coming to us. And, you know, that allows us to have more demand, to raise more capital, to buy more deals, right? And meanwhile, we're improving our reputation and credibility with the broker community. So they know we're performing. They see us doing larger deals. So you've got your equity demand increasing. You've got your ability to source deals to increase. Well, then we were taking those acquisition fees and reinvesting them all into the company by building out infrastructure, right? Making sure that, you know, we're not just scaling, we're scaling responsibly by being proactive and hiring people well in advance when we need them. So we're hiring people right now that we don't even have 40 hours of work for them yet. But we're trying to be proactive because we know in like 60, 90 days when we close more deals, you know, we, by the time they get trained and oriented, we'll have that work for them, right? So we're trying to hire people in advance. And so it all kind of feeds itself. And as we build up more infrastructure and we started our own property management company, we start buying all the materials in bulk directly wholesale. All it does is improve our operations even more, which improves the asset performance, improves investor returns, right? And so it allows us to execute our business plans faster, get stronger returns for investors, sell more deals. And it all kind of just snowballs, right? And so we've always focused on the long-term relationship. And I mean, when we started that property management company, you know, we invested about $600K to $700K of our own personal cash into that company just to float all of these executive salaries and benefits. Because, you know, one thing that we've done, David, to be competitive is, you know, part of our starting the management company was to make sure we can recruit and retain the very best talent in the industry. Because we didn't want to keep using these third-party management companies because they kept having turnover with their staff, constantly going to other places for more money. And so we said, okay, we can't have this. We want to offer the best compensation in the market and the best benefits so we can recruit and retain the best talent to give us continuity. So that's what we've done. I mean, we're covering 100% of all of our employees' medical, dental, vision, 50% of all their dependents. And so we've been able to recruit high-level people from Graystar, Class A management companies. And so we're not experts on property management, but we've hired experts. We've hired a controller. We've hired a full accounting team, regional directors who have experience, paying them, you know, well over six-figure salaries in order to build up this infrastructure. And so, you know, that's what we've done is make sure we're constantly investing in the company because we know it's only going to benefit, you know, the operations and long-term. So we've been able to build a lot of infrastructure, which kind of, you know, feeds itself.
And I'm familiar with your track record. I mean, these exits have all outperformed. You guys have absolutely crushed it on returns. Obviously, you've had some tailwinds in the market and you've been in a phenomenal market. But again, there's a lot of people that are in your market. There's a lot of great companies in your market that haven't done what you've done, or at least, you know, there's a lot that haven't. So I'm familiar with your success and how well you treat investors and the type of returns that you've been able to provide. That being said, I would love to hear about any point in time where you felt like, wow, we are over our skis on this one, or we're pushing to a level that makes me uncomfortable, and how you broke through that, how you fought through that feeling of, hey, maybe we're a little bit over our skis on this one, or maybe things are getting a little bit out of control. We need to, you know, that feeling of, my goodness, have I gone beyond my comfort zone? Did you ever feel that?
Yeah, every day, David. I tell people, the three of us live in like a constant state of chaos, fear, and anxiety, because there's so much going on. And it's not the fear that we're going to fail. It's the fear that we're constantly taking on bigger challenges, and we're constantly pushing the comfort zone, constantly. That's how we've been able to grow. Because if we didn't, we wouldn't have been able to grow. And it's scary. And I'm not Superman. I always have fear and always have anxiety. But I think the more you go through it, the more adversity you overcome, you start to grow, you know, thicker skin emotionally, and helps you become a better leader. It builds that character. And it's, for me, it's kind of like working out. It's like, if you stop working out, your muscles are going to start deteriorating. And if you stop pursuing those challenges and stop embracing the fear and the anxiety and the stomach pains, then you're going to get comfortable. Right. And so, I mean, it's a balance. It's not like we're going to pursue these deals just to, you know, meet our own personal goals of embracing fear at the expense of investors. That's not the case.
Right.
We always feel that the deals that we've done are very well stress tested, and it's a volume game. Like we lose 90 to 95% of the deals we make offers on. But I think that we're making offers, more offers than just about anybody else in the market. You know what I mean? Because we're only focused on one market. And so, you know, it's a couple of different things. I mean, as far as, you know, getting over the skis operationally, I think the first couple of deals, you know, we did that. Because we didn't have the experience, and we were using third-party management, and we were relying on the third-party management company to do the construction management, right? And so all of a sudden, you know, you start to look at your renovations for that first deal specifically. In our first deal, you know, we didn't take any passive investors. It was just a few of us, the three of us and a couple other people, put big chunks of our own money to kind of learn how to do this firsthand. And, you know, the property manager company was not staying on budget or on schedule with these renovations. And I always tell people, it's a value add. So you have to stay on budget. You have to stay on schedule as you're doing the renovations. That's the whole business plan. You know, it's critical. And so, you know, we learned a lot from that, where you really can't take crap from any of these people, from any of these vendors. You have to really micromanage them. And so, you know, part of us hiring that staff was to start taking full control of asset management. And then we took construction management in-house before we ever took property management in-house. Okay, so construction management, meaning we started hiring our own staff to source, bid out, and manage all of our own vendors and construction crews, okay? Then we started buying all of our materials directly wholesale through a warehouse. So all of our flooring, countertops, appliances, stainless steel appliances, everything, and having it drop shipped to our properties on our schedule, making our construction crews use our materials. So we gradually started taking more and more control so that our operations were becoming enhanced. And then finally, we took the property management, you know, over. But the first couple of deals, yeah, we didn't have experience. But I think one thing that we've done that, you know, maybe has set us apart, to answer your early question, is that whenever we have an issue, David, we're very quick to adapt, right? Mm-hmm. So we're gonna identify an issue and acknowledge it, and then we're gonna say, okay, what can we do? And we don't take a lot of time. We will quickly adapt. We won't hesitate to hire somebody. Sometimes Bicker and I will have a conversation, and a job ad will go up the next day for a brand new position that we've created. And we create the title on the spot. We're like, we need somebody to do this because this is a pain point. Okay, let's address this immediately. Put the ad up on Indeed and LinkedIn and start having interviews and start having our office manager. And we hired a talent acquisition specialist. We have a full-time recruiter on salary. Her job is just to interview people and do the preliminary interviews and find candidates for jobs. And so, you know, we're very quick, I think, to adapt and to do what it takes to benefit the business. And then, you know, as far as like, that's operationally, as far as kind of being over the skis or pushing the comfort zone, you know, the thing about raising money is that you never know how much money you're going to raise. That's the scary thing, right? That's why so many people don't get into it. And that's why it's such a scary thing. It's because, yeah, I can talk to all these investors and I can have plenty of conversations, but, you know, the moment of truth comes when I launch that email. How many commitments do I get? And you never know. You never know what's going to happen. We've been fortunate to have a lot of demand, and we're always talking to investors and always try to treat investors very well because we don't take them for granted. You know, I will have a 30 to 60 minute phone call with every single 50K investor as the intro call. I give them a full in-depth, because you can never assume, right? And so I try to treat every investor the same, because that investor might refer me 5 more people, you know what I mean, very quickly. And so, you know, as far as kind of getting in over our skis, you know, we haven't done that to the point where we've failed or that you've like result-wise, those guys are in over their heads. Everything's been performing well, but mentally and emotionally, psychologically, you know, you're always like, is this the deal where I'm going to lose my earnest money? You know what I mean? Because bigger and bigger deals, and you know, it gets scary because it's such, but you know, I felt the same fear when we were buying our first I probably felt more fear buying that first $3 million deal. Now we're doing a $125 million deal with a huge equity raise, raising $57 million. And so our largest raise to date. And I've been stressed out of my mind the last few weeks. Unfortunately, we launched the deal. We've had more demand than ever, and we're going to be good. I think. You know what I mean? It's not closed yet, but it's constantly like, okay, what do we need to do? And I think every successful entrepreneur goes through that. You know, I've heard interviews with Elon Musk where he says he feels fear all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's human nature, right? But it's how do you adapt to that fear and how do you attack it? And you start to gain this, like this quiet confidence that, you know, no matter what happens, I'm going to win. You know what I mean? I'm going to make it happen no matter what. And so we kind of talk about it here. It's like the champion mindset. It's like, we're going to close this deal no matter what happens. It's a matter of what path are we going to take to get there? You know? And so as you go through it, you have more and more adversity and you get that experience and it gives you more confidence to kind of overcome those challenges.
Yeah. Great insight. Yeah. So here we are, end of June. The world of real estate has changed dramatically in the last roughly 30, 60 days. Yeah. Interest rates have hiked. There seems to be quite a gap between seller expectations and what buyers are able to do and lenders are willing to do. Tell me, what's on the horizon for a company like yours? I mean, again, just to reiterate, a tremendous amount of growth, buying over 34 assets in a period of 3 years, with the bulk of those being in the last 12 years or even in the last 18 months. So what's on the horizon for a company like yours? And I guess the next question, it's a two-part question. What's on the horizon for you?
Yeah.
I'll leave it there. I've got the other one in my mind. I'll ask that afterwards. What's on the horizon for Rise 48?
Yeah, good question, David. So yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, the capital markets and the debt have just changed so immensely, you know, the last 10 to 12 weeks, really. And I mean, so I'll say this, you know, fundamentally, and I can only speak for Phoenix, I don't know other markets, but I think this is pretty similar across the country, is that, you know, fundamentally, the fundamentals here in Phoenix have never been stronger. Job growth, population growth, rent growth, never been stronger. Even in the last several weeks, as the stock market is tanking, our properties are performing better than they ever have. We're having no problem renovating units, leasing them up above our projected rents. And that's kind of the beauty of these hard assets, right? Is that they're really not impacted by the stock market. These people have jobs. They're going to work. They're paying their rent. That rent is being passed through to investors as cash flow. So we're very bullish on multifamily as an asset class. We're very bullish on the Phoenix market for multifamily, because even if you look at, you know, historically during recessions like 2008, 2009, I mean, we focus on like B-class workforce housing, as you know, right, David? So affordable market rate housing that we're renovating, increasing the rents, increasing the value in that profit margin for investors. Even in 2008, 2009, when everybody loses their single family homes and they can't afford those class A luxury apartments, they all trickle down into this type of housing that we do, right? It's where the bulk of the demographic lives. The only type of housing below this is like ghetto D-class apartments with crime, or like mobile home parks. So we are in a very well insulated asset class and a very well insulated market. You know, Phoenix had the lowest job loss rate of anywhere in the country during COVID. So we feel very comfortable with our existing portfolio and we are actively making offers. But like you said, you know, the market, the capital markets and the debt have just changed immensely. To give you guys an idea, in March of 2022, a few months ago, we had 10 deals under contract to buy. Okay. And we've had at least two or more under contract for about the last 24 months straight. Right now, we have just one more deal under contract, nothing else in our pipeline. And we got this deal under contract end of February, and we secured our interest rate spread and our debt terms with our lender, you know, almost 2 months ago. And so, you know, we have very good financing, but we could not get that same financing today. In the last 8 to 10 weeks, we've sent around 20 offers or so. And we really cannot get close to what sellers expect, like you said, because from an underwriting perspective, when interest rates go up so quickly, you know, we can't get to the same valuation in the model that we could 3 months ago. And investors say, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that the values have just plummeted? Not necessarily, because these deals are not, it's not that these deals are selling for less, they're just not selling. The sellers are pulling the deals and they're not trading. And so what you've seen now in Phoenix and across the country in the last 4 to 6 weeks, and this we project this to happen for several more months, if not the end of the year at least, is a significant slowdown in transaction activity and deal flow, because the debt is just a moving target. It's very volatile, right? It's like there was a few weeks ago, David, we made an offer on an off-market deal. We won it, $58 million purchase price. We're under LOI. We're drafting the PSA, negotiating the PSA. About a week and a half, 7 to 10 days later, interest rates change, the Fed increases, and we underwrite the deal. And I called the seller and said, hey, we're at $51 million now. We're not at 58 anymore. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, well, if you paying attention to what's been happening, you know, I get on a phone call with the seller. The broker sets this up and I say, honestly, if I was you, I wouldn't sell right now. It's like, I'm just being honest with you. I would not sell if I was you. And we're not selling any new deals because we're active buyers and active sellers. We've bought 12 deals this year. We've sold 5. We're selling one more. And, you know, the market has completely shifted. The last 5+ years, this has been a seller's market. The seller has the advantage. It is now a buyer's market because many buyers are on the sidelines and there's so much volatility with the debt. You can't get, you know, stabilized debt. And so we're very bullish on the performance. We think there's going to be very good opportunities to buy. But the problem is right now is there's no indication of stability as we talk right now, like you said, end of June, because inflation continues to go up. I think the most recent report, people didn't expect it to go up from 8.3 to 8.6%. You know, and so what that did is the Fed decided they need to increase the increase interest rates to 75 bips instead of 50 bips, and it just created a bunch of volatility. And so, you know, a couple things are going to have to happen for stabilization and for an increase in deal flow across the country. You know, one is we need to see some type of indication of inflation starting to slow down or at least stabilize, right? Stop increasing. If it can start to decrease, that will help, because if that happens, then the Fed will start to relax on these aggressive interest rate hikes. And once they start to relax on those, or at least show some type of stability, then lenders will start to be stabilized with what the interest rates can be. Because right now it's a moving target, right? Mm-hmm. Like your interest rate today is not your interest rate tomorrow, meaning that your underwriting model changes daily. You know, and the brokers know this too. The brokers now are like begging us to send offers. They're lucky if we'll even tour a deal because they can't get a lot of activity, you know? And so that needs to happen with inflation needs to start to stabilize or give indications of stability. The second thing is that, you know, our lenders, most of our lenders on these deals and across the country for large multifamily are what are called debt fund bridge lenders. These are publicly traded companies, mostly out of New York City. These are large REITs, okay? Well, they have to deploy capital at some point because they're REITs. They have thousands of investors and they have to provide a yield to their investors. The only way to get a yield is by putting the money out, loaning it out. They're a debt fund. They have to loan dollars to get their margin, pay their investors. And so, you know, the last 2 to 3 months, the spread of the lender, which is their profit margin, the interest rate spread has continued to go up because of all these volatile indications that interest rates keep going up. They have to increase their spread to protect themselves. But sooner or later, if there's some stability with the inflation, then the lenders will start to decrease their spreads because they want to incentivize borrowers to borrow money because they have to put money out, right? And once this, your interest rate, so that the listeners know for these types of deals, it's a combination of the index, which right now is your SOFR. SOFR is the index. And then you have the spread, okay? The lender determines the spread. It's arbitrary and it's going to float over this index, right? Right now, both are going up. The index is going up and the interest rate spread is going up. If lenders can start to get some indications of stability, they will start to cut down their spreads, basically reducing their profit margin so that they can incentivize people to actually take the loans and put the money out. So those are a couple things that need to happen. So, I mean, long story short, Dave, answer your question. I mean, we're very bullish on the market. We do think there's going to be a massive slowdown. We think it's going to be very good buying opportunities. It's a matter of, you know, who can find good debt options and who can find sellers who are willing to maybe come down on their expectations. And so, you know, we are not going to list any new deals for sale the next 2 to 3 months, because we don't want to give a discount to a potential buyer just to sell the deal early, you know? So, you know, we are going to be more active buyers than we are active sellers. Whereas, you know, the last couple of years we've been active on both sides. And so we'll kind of, if things start to stabilize the next few months, we may look to start to list some of the deals that we bought, you know, last summer, because we were planning on doing that until this all ramped up. So that's kind of what we're seeing.
I appreciate that insight. Very helpful. Walk through all that. And I was curious, the second part to that question that I had was in regard to the sold assets. You sold 10 total, but yeah. I believe you mentioned 5 this year. Is that, does that?
Yeah, 5 this year.
Okay. Who is your buyer?
Yeah. Yeah. Good question. So in Phoenix, you know, and this can vary slightly depending on the market, but in Phoenix, you know, it's such a competitive market. It's probably the top multifamily market fundamentally in the country, right? So it's very competitive, very attractive, very saturated. And there's not a lot of private syndication groups like us in Phoenix because of those reasons. So most of our competition, meaning our buyers, our sellers in our competition, are large private equity groups, institutional capital, life insurance companies, hedge funds, et cetera. And so, you know, many of these groups that we've been selling to recently are like large institutional capital groups. Okay. So basically we'll renovate, you know, in the model, we model out to renovate 100% of classic interiors. In reality, we've been cranking through 30 to 50% very quickly because we've been very efficient with our construction management and our supply chain. And then we're exceeding our projections so significantly that we hit the brakes, right? And we say, stop renovating and let's leave 50 to 70% of classic interiors or value add for the next guy. Okay. And so traditionally, a lot of people may think, well, these big institutional groups, I thought they only buy like luxury class A.
Yeah. That's the immediate thought I had was.
That's the perception. Dude. Yeah. The last five plus. Yeah. It's a great point, David. So the last 5+ years, these large institutional groups have all started creating these large value add funds where they have these large buckets of capital, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars a year to deploy towards 1980s, 1970s value add multifamily, because they see it as a risk adjusted investment class because it is so conservative and they're getting a better risk adjusted return than most other alternative investments they could put that into, right? And so, and they're getting the tax benefits. And so a ton of these big institutional groups are buying these deals from us. And you know, the larger the deal, the more likely they'll be institutional. We just sold a deal last week to a family office. And so that out of LA, so that's a little more unique. That was like a 100-unit deal, 21 million. But as you start to get to 150 plus units, you're really playing in an institutional space. And so that's most of our competition, people that we're buying and selling to. And I mean, if you look at like a CoStar report, like the top 50 buyers in every market the last 5 years, we're a top 5 buyer. And we're literally right next to like large institutional groups, life insurance companies, Blackstone, people like that, groups like that. And so, you know, we've kind of been able to carve out, you know, our little niche here by really working these broker relationships, getting deals off market, and just kind of being like the local underdog type of guy to compete with these bigger groups.
Well, we've gone for about 45 minutes here. I've kept you longer than we had planned initially. Privilege to have you on the show, to chat with you, to catch up, and to learn a little bit more about, you know, what's gone on in the last 24 months and what you guys have accomplished. A couple of questions before we wind down here. The last one, or the last couple is, what's the, and we probably have already talked about this, but maybe you can just articulate a little bit more.
Yeah.
What's the biggest challenge that you're facing right now in your business that we could all learn from?
Yeah, great question. And so, you know, I really do think it's the debt financing. So I think, you know, it's the ability to be creative and find options that other people aren't finding right now, I think is going to give you a competitive advantage, right? And so we're looking at everything. Like I was at a conference recently and I met a guy who's on the board of a bank and he's formed and sold multiple banks. And he was saying that, yeah, I can get actually pretty competitive terms with other banks that I know the owners of because of my relationship. And so we're talking about, you know, potentially a strategic relationship where if we can bring this guy in to be like a key principal or something, you know, compliantly, maybe he can get us a relationship with a bank loan that we wouldn't otherwise have access to, mm-hmm. right? So we're really right now kind of looking at how can we be creative? How can we be strategic? And then, you know, operationally, we're actually excited because, I mean, obviously nobody wants a downturn, right? But they come. It's just part of life, part of economic cycles. And, you know, we really feel like the cream of the crop of operators is going to rise to the top the next few years as they go into a downturn, right? And so we feel like we're well situated with our infrastructure where we really want to take pride in that. And we want to show our investors, that, hey, you know, the success the last few years, you know, obviously the market's been strong. It made us look smart. And there's no doubt about that. But we want to show people that we are, you know, good operators and that we have systems in place. And we want to do a really good job communicating and putting in these systems. So it's a good challenge for us. And we're kind of excited because we do think there's a ton of potential. And there's a ton of people who have become very wealthy during downturns. And it's because they're the ones who, you know, they don't get, you know, caught up in the mass thinking of, you know, feeling sorry for yourself. They're the ones who try to look for the opportunities. And obviously you want to be smart. You want to be conservative. You want to protect yourself and your investors. And we'll absolutely do that, which is a reason why we don't have any new deals under contract, which is not like us. But we're going to continue to be aggressive as far as finding deals and finding relationships. So yeah, I mean, we're excited about it. I think, you know, the biggest challenge is just like, you know, how are we going to adapt operationally? How are we going to adapt the debt markets and kind of going from there? So it'll be interesting for sure.
Last question for you. You know, at this stage, based upon what you guys have acquired, there are different levels of success, right? I mean, there's some, you know, billionaires in the world. You guys have accomplished a lot. You could, at this stage in your business, probably sell your assets or, you know, what you've sold, you know, hunker down, hold on to what you've got, continue to manage and operate the deals that you do have, sell those off and be done, right? What keeps you and your partners moving forward and excited about the business?
It's a great question, David. It's a really good question that you say. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, I can honestly say like, I'm not motivated by money. And I tried to be motivated by money when I was doing the healthcare marketing. Like you hit certain numbers, you get bonuses. I tried to do that. And it starts to feel empty and you don't feel the hunger and the excitement, the motivation. And so like the money is nice, right? But for us, for me personally, it's really about the competition and the challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we want to be, and this could sound arrogant or cheesy to some people, but
let's hear it.
Our true goal is to be the greatest real estate company of all time. We want to be the biggest, the best, the baddest ever. So we're truly not satisfied. We don't feel complacent. We don't honestly feel like we've achieved much. I mean, we're grateful to kind of, you know, have gotten some respect locally for at least being one of the bigger players in the market. But we also see a lot of other big groups that we want to be like. And so, you know, we also have really taken pride in the fact that we've maintained 100% control. So we've never done a JV with like a large private equity group. We've raised all of our own capital from investors. We use our own personal cash for earnest money. We sign all the loans ourselves. So we have no masters, so to speak, right? And we really like that because, you know, we don't want to feel like somebody's employee. We want to be true entrepreneurs. And so, you know, our goal going forward is to continue to scale and get bigger and bigger and control everything ourselves. And so, you know, we don't have like concrete goals, what that means yet, but I think we have abstract goals of, you know, potentially maybe going public in the future or just continue to grow larger and larger, stay private and kind of maintain control of everything. Because for us, you know, it's the fun of the challenge. You know what I mean? So I'm to the point now, Dave, we talked about like, you know, you had a great question where you said like, when do you feel like scared or over your skis? Well, I'm kind of to the point now where like, I can't even go on vacation because I get bored. You know what I mean? Like I want the constant challenge. I want the excitement of moving forward. And so getting bigger and bigger brings more challenges and more dynamics and it's fun and it's exciting. And so I can honestly say we don't feel like we've achieved a lot. You know, we are, you know, very hungry, humble and focused and that's kind of what we want to do going forward. So I think there's a lot of runway for us. And I think that's the big thing. I've known people that, you know, once you become satisfied or complacent, I think you kind of like die inside. You know what I mean? Like you don't feel the hunger anymore. And then you don't feel fulfilled, you know, and I don't want to ever be that person. And so, you know, if we ever got to that point where like, well, this isn't exciting anymore, well then, you know, I think something needs to change. You know, because then we're doing our employees a disservice and our investors a disservice. So, you know, we're excited. We love what we're doing. We just got a brand new office building. We're hiring more staff, scaling. And so, yeah, we're really excited kind of going forward for new challenges.
Well, I think you need to put that in your office somewhere. Hungry, humble, and focused. What a great summary of your business. And, you know, it's an honor to have you on the show. I appreciate you coming back on and sharing your inspiring journey thus far. Looking forward to having you on again in a couple of years to see where you guys have gone. I've got a link to connect with Zach and his team. Go down in the show notes right now and click on that link and connect with his team. Outside of that link, Zach, what's the best way for people to reach out to you and connect with you guys?
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. Really appreciate you doing that. And yeah, I mean, you can click on that link and set up a call with us, or you can go to our website, rise48equity.com, and kind of learn a little bit more. You can also email me, you know, Zach, Z-A-C-H, at rise48equity.com, and always happy to get on a call and answer any questions anybody has.
Okay. Hey, a privilege to have you back on the show. Thanks for spending some time with me, and look forward to next time.
Yeah, thanks so much, David. Good talking to you, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, before you go, if you and I haven't connected yet, please head on over to KonovoCapital.com. You can join our investor network or download our free passive investor's guide to multifamily syndications. Either way, I'd love to connect with you personally. Also, I just want to thank you for listening to the show and providing feedback and reviews. If you haven't already, please, please, please take a second and leave us a rating and written review. This helps us to be found by new listeners and helps us attract great guests in the future. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great day.